You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the Outkick Network, this is Outkick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Just like that, the final hour is here, Outkick 360. Glad you're with us, streaming live at Outkick.com and across the Outkick Network from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Coming up, SEC news and notes from scrimmages over the weekend. And we'll dive into the Auburn Tigers and discuss the key factor for determining success versus failure as they go into their season. Lincoln Riley, of course, now the head coach at USC. He's out west along with his quarterback, Caleb Williams, who followed. And Williams says he's ready to handle the pressure that comes with being quarterback for the Trojans and handle the pressure that comes with expectations now that both he and his head coach are there. And Riley, in part, is there, according to an Oklahoma insider through USA Today and their network, Keegan Renau. It's Renau or Renault. He, in a quote about what pushed Riley west from Oklahoma, came down to a perception of how he felt he would be treated when it came to facilities and keeping up with the SEC. Not with the Big 12, but the SEC. And the quote here from Renault, I think Lincoln felt that if I'm not going to get this building, I'm not going to get this amount of staff, I'm not going to get this amount of trainers or nutritional staff, if I'm not going to get all the things that Alabama and Georgia and A&M and Tennessee and Florida have, if I can't have that, then we're going to be behind, and we're already behind. That perspective of Lincoln is going unnoticed because that, to me, tells me that Oklahoma failed in giving Lincoln the confidence that they had the resources and all the things that we've talked about with Brent Venables and donors and boosters. You look at the bigger staff that Venables got. Oklahoma had these things. They were ready to do it. But were they ready to do it Lincoln Riley's way? I think that's the conversation that we ended up having here. Oklahoma, for some reason, maybe felt reserved to give their golden boy everything that he wanted. And he goes on to go in through, Riley was not scared to compete in the SEC if he was going to compete in the SEC from the Oklahoma perspective. That's what surprises me. And part of this is me saying, oh, that's a very easy excuse because we've seen Oklahoma win at a high level. But Riley's also said, like, I coached and was a part of a group, and we've seen Oklahoma get to the college football playoff, and then there was a great divide between us and the SEC. And for whatever reason, he did not feel as though Oklahoma would be all in the way it takes to be all in at that level. Surprising
but,
or no?
It's surprising, but it not so much surprising because he made the move and left for USC. So he seems like a guy who's trying to find the perfect spot to dominate.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go dominate somewhere, you take the USC job and go dominate the Pac-12, you're not going to dominate the SEC unless you're Nick Saban, and he's not. So he's not going to go in the SEC and dominate, even at a great program like Oklahoma. I'm not saying he's ducking competition or he's afraid of it, but I do find it odd that everything he's talking about wanting, it was basically given to Brent Venables moving forward with what they wanted with staff and everything else.
What this guy was saying, though, was from what he's heard and what he felt, Riley was looking for those guarantees. And they wouldn't.
Not getting it.
They wouldn't put it in writing.
So the question is, like, my question when I hear something like that is, all right, were you kind of taking your guy for granted? And then when you lose him, do you wake up and then say to Venables, hey, we'll give you what you need to do what we weren't doing that helped us lose Riley? So I'm curious about the answer to that question. Does Venables come and say, hey, I know he was, you know, lured by the job, it wasn't hard for him to say yes, but does he come kind of saying, hey, we need to do, you know, X, Y, and Z to keep up with the Joneses, that's part of why you lost your guy and let's get to work? Or is he coming in fully accepting the deficient, quote unquote, deficiencies that Riley was upset about? That's a very interesting thing to me that we don't necessarily get an immediate answer to.
Well, and also, Oklahoma is not a program that wants someone that's going to leave for another job. Like this, this sounds arrogant of me to say, but that's not a program accustomed to having hired someone that's even flirting with another job. Bob Stoops wasn't entertaining other jobs while he was at Oklahoma. So when they have success, I think the powers that be at Oklahoma are thinking, dude, we're not going to promise you anything other than the gobs of money we're paying you now. Like, who are you to make all these demands? And who did they go and hire? They didn't hire some hotshot proven head coach. They hired some dude who came in and said, I would die for this job.
Yeah.
There's no, this is my final resting place. I will die right here in Norman, Oklahoma, on the job if I have to. That's who Brent Venables is. He wouldn't even leave Clemson as defensive coordinator when given a chance. And he finally left for this job. So I think some of it is that. You know, you go the opposite way without coaching hire. So they went defense from offense with Lincoln Riley, but they also went with a guy who they know is not going to leave them. I think that's part of it. I just don't think that they're equipped to match. When a coach comes and says, I'm considering leaving for this job, give me this, this, and this, Oklahoma says, go. We'll hire someone else that wants to be here. I think that's still their mindset there. And it's because they haven't been left at the altar up until Lincoln Riley left them at the altar.
Can Caleb Williams be the fire starter for USC? Because there is the expectation that they are about to take what was a program low. They went 4-8. That's the worst record in 31 years at USC. They're about to go from that to Pac-12 championship game caliber with Riley and with Williams and through the transfer portal and by taking Oklahoma's, essentially their staff, their nutritional staff, their trainers, all that went with them. Caleb Williams pointed that out as one of the reasons why he chose to just leave and go with Riley is that everyone he was familiar with and everyone he enjoyed playing around and with was headed there too. If they do that, so the NCAA record for the biggest turnaround from 1 year to the next is Hawaii with June Jones. It was like 99 and 2000 or 98 and 99 where they didn't win a game and then won like 9 games the following year. And that's still the record. And June Jones was interviewed for a piece at CBS about the USC program. And he said, look, they are at a point where they are, again, a title contender without even seeing a game because he saw what he saw at Oklahoma and he saw the quarterback. And he said the biggest emphasis is that the quarterback went with him. And now he gets to start with a head start. Like he's not starting over, but really, that's what Oklahoma's been known for recently. They get the transfer quarterbacks to come in, from Kyler Murray to Jalen Hurts, Caleb Williams, I mean, and others. You get the quarterbacks to come in and then transfer with you, with the coach coming in and making something of the talent that joined you.
The thing about what June Jones did, though, is he brought a run and shoot, which is vastly different, right? You can call it a gadget or whatever, but it's dramatically different than standard thing. Lincoln Riley's taken his offense, very good offense, but it's not like some unforeseen and never before seen, or you're going to have to do some massive prep to get ready for this thing that's outside of the ordinary. So, I think Lincoln Riley has success at USC. How fast is the question? You know, is it immediate or does it take a year or two?
I think I understand, you know, what Caleb Williams is saying. It's different being at USC than Oklahoma, but I mean, if you're ready for the pressure at Oklahoma as a starting quarterback, you're ready for the pressure at USC. The only difference is,
he was,
you know,
great last year when he came in.
Yeah, the weather and you're in a big city. But I mean, the atmosphere, it was a lot tougher at Oklahoma in games in the Big 12 than the atmosphere you're going to see in the Pac-12. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. And that's no big departure for him.
Well, and he went on to say USC is a blue blood of college football. It's as simple as that. He said teams and organizations, they have fought moments. We are here trying to turn that around. So the turnaround could be quick because in the top 25 released today, the AP top 25, they're ranked 14th. Keep that in mind from 4 wins to now a preseason rank at 14, ahead of Michigan State, ahead of Miami, that could have and should, based on the hype, should have a first-round caliber quarterback at Miami. Pitt, I mean, they're ahead of all these programs that are coming off strong seasons. And we saw SC at the depths
of Kentucky, Ole Miss.
Seen in 3 decades. And because Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams are there, they are not only 14th, they're 5 spots behind Oklahoma in the preseason top 25.
I mean, if you wanted to get some long odds, I would take them as a playoff team.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
based on perception,
would I be
and where
shocked if Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley ran the table in the Pac-12 and they were better than Utah and Oregon, or beat, because Utah and Oregon are both in the north, you know, beat one of those teams in the Pac-12 championship and snuck their way in to the college football playoff?
I
would look at that.
I love what
I'd like to know what the odds are of them being a playoff team.
I love that they're embracing the big city feel. I know it smells sounds small time, but they're not bowing away from, oh, this is just the next college football job. Lincoln Riley saying, you don't come to USC and you don't come to Los Angeles to do things small. You've got to set your sights big. By saying that, he's embracing the expectation. I love that part of it. Like, you're not downplaying it and waiting a year and saying, hey, we're inheriting something where we won 4 games a year ago. It's not that at all. Maybe that works its way in whenever the losing starts, but I love the way that they've started the momentum there. So does the media based on the poll.
It's wherever you go, you're looking for the right message for your location when you're in recruiting and your college football. If you are the coach who bolted from Oklahoma after going to multiple college football playoffs, why did you bolt? You bolted for Hollywood.
Yeah.
You bolted for the quote-unquote big time. Consider a debate 17,000
square foot mansion.
Yeah, I'm going to debate USC being a bigger program than Oklahoma. It's not. I'm not going to say that they are, but L.A. is certainly bigger than Norman.
Yeah.
So what am I going to sell now? Well, I'm selling exactly that, that this is the big time in Los Angeles.
Carson Wentz with a last-chance moment with the Washington Commanders. Chad, you sent this to us over the weekend, and watching, it's a short clip. We've got it. You're going to hear it here, where there's a reporter that sits down with Carson Wentz at training camp. And
it's the local DC ABC affiliate.
Yes.
A reporter. I don't have the reporter's name in front of me. I can tell you this. Dan Dockich is going to have him on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
On Don't At Me. Dylan Taylor was telling us that before the show today. So that's a nice get to interview this. I call him a kid. It's kind of hard to tell just how old the reporter is.
He's not, a little more than a kid.
He's not young.
Yeah, I'd say he's probably 30s, maybe early 30s.
Probably.
What'd you say?
Yeah, early to late 30s. But, I mean, that's me thinking I'm still young in late 30s. So
I struggle with that too. Heart. Yeah, when you hit the big 4-0, it's really different. It's like,
here's the local Washington really Commanders ABC affiliate with 2 questions to Carson Wentz that were very direct.
There's been kind of a narrative out there here in training camp that you've been a little inaccurate on your throws. Consistently inconsistent has been a kind of a terminology. How would you assess your performance in training camp, and is that characterization fair?
Yeah, I mean, for one, it's camp. You know, I think I didn't know that, so thank you.
Yep. But I know you told me you don't read that stuff.
At the same time, I'm my biggest critic. So I come back after practice and I'm kicking myself over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plays, you know.
Real talk here, Carson. It's been well documented. Philly didn't want you. Indy didn't want you. Do you think this is your last chance to prove that you can be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, I don't really think about all that stuff. For me, I'm playing the game that I love, and I have the most confidence of anybody in myself to deliver, to play at a high level, to, you know, be a part of something special here with this team. And so I don't put all that pressure on myself. I don't put, you know, people can feel that way, people can say what they want, and I have no issue with that. You know, that is what it is. But for me, I don't think in those terms.
So there's Carson Wentz with the answers to the very direct questions. The big takeaway I had watching it on Saturday, Chad, when you sent this, was he says he has no issue with that. Yeah. That's part of the issue with Carson Wentz.
Well, it's also funny when he's like, oh, you know, you're going to have maybe one, two,
three, four,
bad
five.
Plays, three, four, five bad plays. I just love how in his mind he's thinking about, he's probably thinking about the practice that just ended, and he's like, oh, it's one.
To what you said,
that's
huh?
two picks. Oh, there's a third. Oh, crap, four and five. Yeah,
I think
five
guys
bad plays.
Overdo the chip on their shoulder thing. He underdoes
yeah.
the chip. There's no nothing on his shoulder.
The guy asking the question, I love. Because the first up,
very casual.
I give him total.
He's not
total
worried about
props.
Any reaction from Wentz.
Total
that tells
props.
You everything.
Yeah, he's not going to get hit.
Because like at least he went about it. Like we got something to talk about. Most local news sit downs are going to be very canned.
Yep.
There's so you took your family to
there's
Disney.
A media relations person standing right over the shoulder of the guy. You know, wrapping it up in 90
Why
seconds.
Why is this a good fit
minutes.
For you?
Whatever. Yeah. Just very open ended. Like this guy at least went into it with something. Like hey. Real talk now. I started with that.
All right, real talk.
Is this your last chance? Do you feel
Philly it? Didn't want you.
Do you feel the pressure
Indy
that this is your last chance? We all feel it. We feel it for you, Carson. Are you feeling that pressure? No, you know, I don't even really think about it. But the way he's I'm going to be watching this interview tomorrow with Dockage because I just love the guy, the reporter's overall demeanor with Carson Wentz that's just kind of kicked back like, dude, I'm going to tell you what we're all saying about you out there. Here's what's being said. What are your thoughts?
Oh, thanks for telling me. I didn't know.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I had no idea that what's people going on. Think I stink.
And I thought Wentz handled himself well. You know, he didn't have any reaction really at all, but he rolled with it. He could have been gotten bit out of shape.
He rolled with it. He was fine. But therein lies a great example of how the Eagles and the Colts both wanted a little more leadership from the guy. A little more. Right? To show something. And he didn't really give two thoughts about those organizations not wanting him and kicking him to the curb. There's something to that, that there's an element to that at the quarterback spot that you've got to have.
Guys are incredibly.
Especially, and yes, this is his last opportunity to prove that he's the unquestioned starter
next job's
for any
a backup.
Team in the league in August.
Next job's a backup. He'd be lucky to be competing with a rookie somewhere. But it's probably a backup.
And he's allowed to prove it. And last year, he wasn't awful. But he also
wasn't clutch.
Exactly. And there's a grit to the position that just isn't all there all the time. And, well, specifically with Wentz. That's what's held him back from staying in Philly and staying in Indy. And winning a game on the road in Jacksonville.
Being
and not,
in the playoffs.
Not having this type of conversation.
Wentz would have gone a long way towards being back in my eyes if he would have responded to the guy and said, I don't know, do you feel like this is your last opportunity at this local affiliate in D.C. to finally nail it as a sports reporter? That would have been a great comeback in a joking way. Is this your last chance? I'm not sure. Well, it's all our last chances. What if he said, I treat every day like it's my last chance. Do you? Are you treating this job like it's your last chance of being on TV?
There are a lot of ways to handle that.
He went the very...
That he didn't choose. He was a minimalist.
He went the neutral route, right? I'm just going to answer this like it's a standard question I get all the time and not
we'll
worry about
here.
It. Yep. Then I'm going to get back to the locker room.
That's part of the problem, man. The Wentz conundrum. Just say that you've heard the talk and you want to prove people wrong. That'll shut a lot of people up.
Yeah, perhaps he's hearing impaired.
Or things are really looking bad for him in Washington.
Or like I said, just come back and say, I treat every opportunity like it's my last one. You don't know when this is going to end in this game.
You know, Billy,
so this is the way I've treated my entire career. This may be it. Who knows? But I'm going to treat it that way and work hard to prove people wrong.
You know, Billy, I spend my life walking around in noise-canceling headphones. I don't hear a damn thing.
He's like John Calipari. I'm going to just coach my team and block out the clutter. That's what I'm going to do, what I've done my entire career.
We've got SEC news and notes for you. Alabama scrimmage. There's a wide receiver battle in Tuscaloosa we'll tell you about. A note on Georgia, plus our SEC spotlight today, Auburn. The Auburn Tigers, we discussed the quarterback position and an area to watch at that spot for determining whether or not we look at this team as a successful 2022. That's next on OutKick 360.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
A few SEC notes for you. Outkick 360 rolls on. Alabama held their first scrimmage. From Aaron Suttles and his reporting, the first three wide receivers in three wide, Ja'Cory Brooks, Trayshawn Holden, and Jermaine Burton. Tyler Harrell not in that group. Brooks had a couple of drops in the scrimmage that would have been a touchdown or touchdowns, but he continues to impress in other moments of camp. He and Bryce Young, speaking of Ja'Cory Brooks, they have developed a great chemistry, according to the reporting in Tuscaloosa. Saban says the scrimmage was sloppy, way too many penalties. Tell me if you've heard this before from me last week about describing their season. Way too many penalties, undisciplined penalties, offsides on defense, illegal formations, penalties on special teams. Quote, at this point, we need to practice to improve on a lot of things to play winning football.
Sounds like bad coaching.
That from Nick Saban.
Can't get his guys lined up?
Paul, that bad coaching just won the SEC and went to the national title, having the same problems last year.
I know.
Auburn under the lights on Saturday night. TJ Finley having a good scrimmage. He operated the offense well, according to his head coach. He led a 14-play drive to open the scrimmage. Harsin said, quote, conceptually, he picks things up quickly. He's a coach on the field, and he echoes our points to the rest of the offense. A really good understanding of what we are trying to accomplish. He did miss some layups, though, in this scrimmage. Robbie Ashford is, based on the depth chart of the scrimmage, the second quarterback. Zach Calzada is quarterback number three, and that brings us to our SEC preview, where we discuss the quarterbacks from last year and the addition of Calzada. The fact that Ashford can factor in, and we look at the numbers. They had a 59 completion percentage rank, counting Bo Nix in the group last year. They threw for over 3,000 yards, just 17 touchdowns. That's the second fewest in the conference. That's just more than Vanderbilt in the SEC with 17 touchdowns from the quarterbacks. Four interceptions, 23 sacks taken. 17's not enough. The question is, will they get better quarterback play this year? Can they, or we'll set the over-under at 25 passing touchdowns this year for a team. For a point of reference, the reason I picked 25, 25 would have ranked 40th nationally. 17 ranked 82nd nationally. So a growth to 25 passing touchdowns would move them from below average to average. Can they find average quarterback play from Brian Harsin's group, knowing he had an offseason to hit the transfer portal, and they have TJ Finley right now remaining the starter, and he wasn't that good a year ago.
Well, Bo Nix, I mean, you talked about that. His passing statistics have never been great. He's a good athlete playing the position. He's going to be the starter at Oregon, who's a top 20 team nationally. So he's obviously got something, but those numbers are... You mentioned it, just ahead of Vandy,
yeah,
in passing offense. I mean, it was that way before Harsin got there with Bo Nix also, yep, and then that continued. So
can they just be average?
I mean, as weird as this sounds, could it be some addition by subtraction with Bo Nix leaving? We'll see what he does at Oregon this year.
Well, it can.
But, I mean, what is that going to mean for the passing offense now if it's TJ Finley?
Isn't it a little skewed, though? Didn't they have 22 rushing touchdowns?
Yeah, but I'm basing this on quarterback play. They need better play from the quarterbacks overall.
I don't disagree with that at all, but they were finding a route into the end zone.
Inconsistent and inaccurate would be how I'd describe Bo Nix a lot of times.
So I'm taking the under, by the way.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm taking the under because you have a coach fighting for his job, and maybe he doesn't really want it. I've yet to figure that part out. Because I think it has brought them together internally. I'm not sure what that means when they go on a losing streak in the regular season.
Nothing.
They're giving the first team reps to TJ Finley, who we've seen with Harsin. And while they're praising him for a 14-play drive, a methodical drive, and he gets credit for that, what I don't hear are descriptions of being a game changer. What I hear is, well, he's a coach on the field, and he knows what we're asking these quarterbacks to do. I hope you're asking more from TJ Finley than what you did a year ago. And I'm not hearing that. So that's why I'm taking the under. And guys, Robbie Ashford was the starter for A-Day. He was the MVP. Shouldn't say starter. He's the MVP of A-Day in the spring. He needs to go win this job for them to have a chance at the over here. Because I think we know what TJ Finley is. Zach Calzada, I mean, he had his glorious moment by helping A&M beat Alabama. And he's the reason why A&M lost to Arkansas. And Zach Calzada has not won a college quarterback battle. And he's third string right now. Not to say he can't move up, but, I mean, the clock's ticking a bit. We're 28 days away, less now, 21 days away now from kickoff. Vanderbilt's 2 weeks away. I'm down on the descriptions that I've heard, even though I think Ashford gives them a better chance, and I hope his development shows that he's more suited for the job, because we've seen Finley. We haven't seen as much from Robbie Ashford.
They lose their top. Let's just go through the list here. And look, we like sports because crazy, unexpected things happen. Yeah. But let's look at what we know about Auburn. They had an offseason where boosters tried to get their coach fired and failed. And that coach is now
back
in an awkward situation. They lost their top three pass catchers from a passing offense that already was pretty inept. They lose their starting quarterback. Again, maybe addition by subtraction. We'll find out. But he's going to be the starter at a top 20 team in Oregon. He's gone. Your defensive coordinator, who almost won you the Iron Bowl, Derek Mason, former Vandy head coach, bolts not just for a lateral position at Oklahoma State, a huge pay cut.
Yeah,
the man took far less money to get the hell out of the Plains and not work for Brian Harsin. He had to elevate his former defensive coordinator at Boise State, who served as linebackers coach a year ago at Auburn. They lose Smoke Monday and Roger McCreary from a really good secondary. I'm looking at this roster and looking at this situation thinking, this team is dead by late September, early October. They are dead in the water already. And I don't see any route for them to be successful.
They're counting on guys who didn't like it at Oregon, didn't like what was incoming at Oregon to be good. Ashford, starting with Ashford, Jason Jones, defensive tackle, who's a big guy in the middle, and DJ James, a cornerback to help replace those guys you talked about losing. I don't know what the pipeline to Oregon is, but it's their main incoming transfer portal place.
The exodus from Auburn will start when Penn State goes down there and houses them early in the season.
It's a good game last year. Unless likely this year.
Interest will wane on that roster once that loss happens.
Robbie Ashford's a freshman. He's a transfer. He's a redshirt freshman. But in this era, and especially with the situation being what it is at Auburn, where you feel like there's a new staff there next year, to me, it's malpractice not to take advantage of the transfer portal in a better way at that position. To not be able to upgrade after you've had 12 months to know that you're desperate for an upgrade there when a ton of talent is looking to move just for the sake of moving. Like, they'll just musical chairs now at the position of college football quarterback. And to stick with T.J. Finley's a backup quarterback. Like, we've seen enough of T.J. Finley.
Started three games a year ago.
If it's addition by subtraction, he should have been starting more games over Bo Nix. And instead, Bo Nix is now at Oregon, and TJ Finley just takes over and is getting praised for being a game manager, basically, is what they're praising him for in this scrimmage. I turn it over to the young guy and see if you can't find a spark.
Well, here's how.
If you're going to wait on that, you're waiting on that. To me, the time's up by the time you put him into the game and turn things over to him.
I don't think they're going to be good. But if you're game managing, start here, third down. Last nine games where they didn't convert at least 30%, 0-9. So you got to move the chains. We're not expecting big plays. We're not expecting them to throw it into the end zone very often. We're taking the under on the number that Hutton set. but at least move the chains, give yourself a chance, get over 30%.
It's going to be an all-time back from the dead coaching job if Brian Harsin
us against the world
can get them to 8 or 9 wins and save his job.
Yep.
I mean, I really believe that. I don't even know if that saved
otherwise, they forestalled the inevitable, which we all thought was dumb when they did it.
Yeah.
Just saved them for a year.
If you have that many people trying to, you know, in the inquiry to try to make sure you can get out, and the only reason is just buyout, I don't know what 8 wins does.
Should have made the move.
I know the schedule sets up for them to be 4-0.
Mercer, no, it doesn't. Mercer,
it can.
San Jose State, I think Penn State's going to beat them bad.
Playing Jordan Hare is not easy.
No, and I think Missouri, this about Missouri and Eli Drinkwitz. Like, that's a big game for Missouri. That's a winnable game on the road against Auburn.
You could have,
but I would say Auburn would be a slight favorite over Missouri at home right now.
You could have a potential unbeaten versus unbeaten when they play LSU. And it does. Crazy. I mean, think about the way Penn State plays. James Franklin plays tight games. They don't blow anyone out. So I don't see them going on the road and blowing out Auburn at Auburn at home. I don't buy that one bit.
Well, just how bad is Auburn? We'll find out.
Well, Auburn's—they're good. They're not great. Like, they're in games, but they don't have the closeout mentality. You know, Auburn beat Ole Miss last year.
Well,
so, I mean,
the middle of that division. Here's a big one. They're hosting LSU this year.
Yeah.
Like that's the type of game in year one that could determine success or failure for Brian Kelly in year one, and it could determine Brian Harsin's job moving forward, we're getting them at home.
Well, Brian because Harsin's this is job the year, to finish the year.
Yeah, this is the – yeah, that's correct. The Tale of Two Bryans will take place at Auburn Stadium on October
1st. You're hitting on a theme, though. You think he can save his job with 8 wins?
No, I don't. I think – I mean, look, with this roster and everything he's faced, any reasonable person would say 8 wins, great job. Great job. I mean, you righted the ship to some degree. It's better than the year before. No one saw that coming. You lost your quarterback. You lost all these other guys. You came back and you won 8 games. I think that's a good job by Brian Harsin. I don't think he's going to win 8 games. I think this schedule screams 6 wins, which 6 wins will be enough for, you know, the boosters to finally get their way, and they can fire him and go hire someone else.
Well, they nearly got their way. Despite all of that, I just don't. And based on Harsin's the whole tenor of SEC media days, like there was just a vibe that he's going to go out and do his job and his team's together, but it is his team versus literally everyone else internally. That was the vibe. It's like, hey, we're not addressing this again. We are closer because of the inquiry. Yes, I'm upset. And yes, it affected me and the job we're doing, but we're not addressing it moving forward. We're worried on the upcoming schedule. But I didn't get the same vibe as, like, we're continuing to build the program. It was, we're worried about this year. We're worried about getting through this year. That was the tone of Harsin. And Harsin wants to be in Oregon just like Bo Nix right now.
That's the sad part about all this is, I mean, even if Brian Harsin successfully rallies his troops to give him 9 wins, let's say, it's a huge surprise, and 9 wins, and he can get a job elsewhere, that's what he's – you said he's not talking about the long haul. He's talking about this season.
Yeah.
He's not focused on building a program to Cincinnati. I'm focused on this season with my guys. Why is that? Because if you're successful, it's going to help your chances to get out and get another job.
Here's what Harsin did last year. He beat Arkansas by 2 possessions. He beat Ole Miss by 2 possessions. Auburn did. They get handled easily by A&M.
They lost a close game at Penn State early on.
I'm going middle of the year here, down the backstretch. They lose a tight game in a high-scoring affair against Mississippi State. That was at Jordan-Hare. It was 43-34, the final. End of November, they lose to South Carolina by 4, 21-17 on the road. They turn around and they lead Alabama 10-0 with, 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter? End up losing that in triple overtime. If they win that game, based on those results that we read, there's no inquiry whatsoever. You know, they go lose a close one. Bowl games are what they are, but they lose 17-13 in the bowl game to Houston. But you're right. It was 28-20 was the final score, Penn State over Auburn, earlier in the year. They beat LSU on the road last year, and Georgia beat them by 24 at home. That's your SEC slate for them. So it's like last year was pretty good based on our season setup right now. And if they repeat that same thing, he's out. He's done.
Yeah, they had the close scare against Georgia State. I remember Georgia State was up late in the fourth quarter of that game at Auburn, and they ended up winning 34-24. I remembered that game because I'm thinking that felt like the start of something bad for Brian Harsin. The bottom line with Brian Harsin is, from everyone you will talk to at Auburn, is that he just doesn't get along with the power brokers there that well. He doesn't talk to them. He's not their type of guy. And that's rubbed them the wrong way. So they're just looking for anything.
Which is weird, though, because he was their handpicked guy. He was like this. There was, you know, the big parade. We got the Boise guy coming in.
And
strange. They went West Coast, and the West Coast guy wants to be back on the West Coast.
Yeah. And they want him back on the West Coast. They'll pay for the ticket.
Well, plus, I mean, look around at the coaches in the SEC West right now. Like the who's who list of any era of football over the last 20 years, you start naming off these guys, and they've either been in the SEC or they were, you know, doing some random stuff at Texas Tech or Washington State that had people talking.
Yeah.
As you look around, they're a team like I want to root for them. I want him to win just to see what happens based on what happened in February. But at the same time, I'm not really sure if there's a result that saves it. Because I think he's also out.
And the big number last year is that they end the season losing five straight, even with the bowl game. So that's where you lead into February, January, early February, where the inquiry's happening because they're upset.
Davey Hudson brings up a good point, a great question. Who's the least accomplished head coach in the SEC West, Kiffin or Harsin?
Harsin.
I mean, last year was pretty good accomplishment
because Kiffin has done a good job at Ole Miss, and just simply by being the USC head coach, I feel like that
getting that job,
time there, it was bad, but he also inherited a mess.
USC didn't allow him to fly back on their team plane after a loss. They said GTFO immediately. That was rough for him. But the one area I would give him some benefit is like, if he sticks around at Tennessee, they were doing something there. You know, there's a reason why people wanted to riot when he left and were so upset with him and still wanted him back on a different coaching search.
Second go-round.
4 or 5 years later. There's value. Harsin just feels like a West Coast guy. It's just not a great fit in the SEC. Kiffin fits the SEC.
I'm just trying to see what Harsin did at Boise State exactly, other than just be the head coach for 7 years.
Well,
they were good while he was there, but I mean, were they great? And he takes over for Chris Peterson.
Yeah.
Chris Peterson was great.
Great.
Chris Peterson did a great job at Washington. I mean, you want to talk about being born on third base? Both these guys. Lane Kiffin's the ultimate born on third base coach when you look at his early career with the jobs he was handed at a very young
age. He won the genetic lottery.
The least accomplished coach to get the Oakland Raiders job, followed by the Tennessee Vols job, followed by the USC job. That goes to Lane Kiffin. This many years later, he did a good job at Florida Atlantic. He did a great job as offensive coordinator at Alabama. He's done well at Ole Miss. I mean, I'd say it's Kiffin, but it's a great question. I think both of them are close.
I think
Kiffin's more accomplished, I'm saying.
Yes. Initially, I think people would just jump to say Kiffin. But if you think about what Kiffin's truly done versus expectation of the name and where he's been, you know, maybe not. But again,
he's done his best job at Ole Miss.
You're right. They may be filing an inquiry for something else, but it's not for trying to fire him because he nearly beat Alabama and has a $15 million buyout.
Well, and think about this. Kiffin left Tennessee under NCAA investigation and went to USC that was just getting hammered by the NCAA at the time. This was the aftermath of Pete Carroll bolting for the Seahawks, right?
Yes.
And all that going on where they got huge penalties when
he
took over.
Al Davis do an overhead projector presentation against him. with the case against him.
That same overhead projector could have been used in Knoxville too.
ESPN
by people who were angry. They loved him at the time, but man,
ESPN points out that Auburn has the toughest strength of schedule in the country.
That's weird to me because they get Penn State, but they all. I mean,
I'm sure some of it is they're on Mercer the road didn't for a few of these now too. Moving forward, they're hosting LSU. They're on the road at Alabama.
Mercer.
Yeah, Mercer.
I the more I think about it, it's a great question from Davey. The more I think about it, Kiffin's way more accomplished than Harsin. Harsin was...
What was he at Boise State?
He was the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, so co-offensive coordinator from 06 to 10. That was his first big, relatively big job. He was Texas's co-offensive coordinator for two seasons. Okay. And then he went to Arkansas State for 1 year and bolted for Boise State when that head coaching job came open. He was there 2014 to 2020. And then Auburn 1 year. He's 82-31 overall, which is a good record.
69-19 at Boise.
It's pretty good. But inheriting the job done by Chris Peterson.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice spot to land.
What Kiffin's doing at Ole Miss, taking over for the great Matt Luke, I think is a little different than just being handed the Boise State program in that conference from Chris Peterson.
And while
I feel like there's a lot of coaches who could do well at Boise State given that situation in their conference.
Yeah,
you kind of have to try to screw it up.
And while there's a feel with Kiffin that while he wants out, I mean he's totally fine taking the Miami job, for instance. There is a feel with him that he's trying to level up a notch from where he is based on what he's trying to compete with. Harsin, it just feels like he's just not a fit unless he's on the West Coast. I could completely wrong with the vibe, but I'd love to know where else he was trying to get to outside of Oregon whenever jobs were opening up. And there weren't many to give him some credit. There weren't many while the inquiry was going on. I mean, it was late in the process.
It was just so weird when Harsin took that. Like, when it was Auburn hiring him, I'm thinking, that's just an odd fit. I didn't think it's a bad hire. I didn't think he's a bad coach. I'm just thinking that's just a weird fit that the guy that left Arkansas State after a year to go back home to Boise, where I believe he played quarterback. Yeah, he was quarterback at Boise State. And then goes to Auburn. It didn't seem right from the beginning. Mismatched.
Hey, congrats to Kirby Smart in Georgia. They can now host recruits for the world's largest cocktail party in Jacksonville. That was something he was complaining about not too long ago. Coming up, we tell you about the week ahead with the Bucks coming to town for a joint practice and a huge week for the Atlanta Braves. Actually, now Kick 360.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
A lot of joint practices, if they haven't happened for your favorite team already, chances are they're taking place this week. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for instance, are traveling to Nashville on Wednesday and Thursday for two joint practices ahead of the preseason game here in Nashville on Saturday. No Tom Brady. That's been heavily discussed over the weekend as to his whereabouts and what's going on. Maybe we learn more this week, maybe we don't. I don't know what that means for guys like Mike Williams, how many of the veterans, Chris Godwin, how many of the veterans for them will play at wide receiver, but it takes away some of the emphasis of ones versus ones for sure. There are others. For instance, the Vikings hosting the 49ers, where Trey Lance had a phenomenal preseason debut leading a touchdown drive, looked very good. So we'll begin to see more storylines develop and play out as I think depth charts from the unofficial preseason release become more official as we see guys rise and fall based on the one-on-one matchups and ones versus ones, good versus good. Braves and Mets, we get a little good versus great Mets are unbelievable right now, but the Atlanta Braves have won six straight. I think they won six games last week, and now they host the New York Mets in Atlanta.
Chad's confidence is not high.
No, not high against the Mets. They swept the Red Sox in Fenway. They swept the Marlins in Miami. Miami is such a difficult place to play. Such great atmosphere every time you head down there. I mean, it is like going to a funeral in that place.
Lions
it
preseason.
Is unbelievable how bad the atmosphere is in Miami for baseball. And the baseball is bad also for the Marlins. But the Braves swept them this weekend. Four now against the Mets and then three against the Astros, all in Atlanta. Two of the best teams in baseball this week. So we're going to find out a lot more about the Braves, who've had a good year. I keep saying it takes one great series against the Mets, and you're right back in it. But I'll believe that series is going to happen when I see it, because they've been bad against the Mets so far this year.
Paul will be rooting for your Braves.
Spencer Strider on the bump tonight for the Braves.
I like losses for the Mets.
Join us. Plenty of NFL headlines and more SEC discussion coming up on Tuesday for Outkick 360.
Read this and weep. Don't block the box. Please, please lock your locks.